In the first series of Marcus Oldham Ag Talk podcast, Matt Au joined us to discuss his research on Australian farmland values. Since then, land values have continued to go north, so we thought it was time to have Matt back on to update us on the current trends and drivers behind the continued rise in land values. In producing his analysis, Matt would like to acknowledge CoreLogic as the source of this data. Welcome, Matt. It's great to have you back here. I see you've had a change of shirt since we last talked, nearly 2 years ago, actually.
Yeah, well, it's nice to be back, firstly, David. But I have had a bit of change in that 2 years. I didn't realise it was 2 years, actually, since I was on last. So, yes, now I'm over at Elders in the pink shirt.
Yep.
As a senior communications specialist over there and still looking at market insights.
Yep.
And still looking at farmland values, amongst a few other things.
Fantastic. Well, again, farmland values is something that obviously interests us all, especially farmers. And since we had you on, I imagine a fair bit's been happening.
Yeah, been plenty happening. And I did actually listen to our episode yesterday just to see what I said and then see where I was wrong. But there's been a lot happened since, and I think when we were speaking last time, I was sort of hinting at an uplift in transaction volume, just driven by some better seasons and what we were seeing at the time, and that was 2020. But I was also a bit nervous around commodity price and what was happening with some trade tensions as well as COVID, obviously, and some supply chain pressures. So there's a bit to wash through. So some of it was right, some of it was wrong, definitely.
And so one of the things I think we can say is that, and again, hindsight's a wonderful way of looking at it. Overall, though, I would have thought most of the commodity fundamentals have held, if not slightly better. And based on the relationships we were talking about in the last one, basically the relationship between commodity prices and land values, that should all go well for land values. If you're selling, not so much if you're buying.
Yep. Yeah, you're spot on. So yes, the commodity price was probably better than what I anticipated in terms of appreciation. So obviously there's a few things at play there, probably some domestic market factors which had a bit more weight than maybe what I was expecting. So restocker demand certainly put livestock prices right up. And then we got some favourable international factors for grain, which wasn't necessarily expecting either. So global supply was back a little bit. And then there was some inflation pressures in other countries. So there was some moves to sort of preserve their grain price, if you like. And that made Australian grain quite attractive. Some of the cheapest in the world comparatively, but some high prices for us.
I think it's important to just, I suppose, recap on the last one was that what your research had shown is there's a very strong correlation between commodity prices and land values. Now, people might say, well, that's obvious, but it's stronger than, for instance, a relationship between productivity or profitability. And while interest rates is a support, it's not a main driver of land values. Would that be a fair recap?
Yep, I think that would recap it pretty well. And I don't know if we had the finding when I was on last, but certainly some great work with that Rural Bank report and connecting the dots between commodity price and farmland values. Very tight correlation up to 2019.
Yep.
And then we noticed quite a divergence between appreciation in farmland values going ahead of commodity price growth. So that was something that fell out of that research, and that divergence has actually continued in 2021, believe it or not. We have had some obvious commodity prices improving, but land value has been pretty hot too, and that has actually separated that relationship a bit.
So that'll be interesting. I imagine you've got some thoughts on that, but okay, just to put the listeners in perspective, what have we seen with land values since that last report?
Yeah, sure. So 2020 was sort of the breaking of drought in a lot of regions, and that did lead to quite a bit of sales activity towards the end of 2020. So the second half of 2020 in most states, there was a pretty rapid rise in land values. And we're thinking that was probably going to carry over into 2021 and maybe with some more transaction volume. So the first quarter of 2021, we certainly saw that happen. So there was still a lot of transaction volume in the market. And then what I didn't allude to was was how long that would actually last for, because there's not a lot of sell side factors in the market at the moment. So you think of the buy side factors, there's plenty, and they're well covered. And we just spoke about commodity price, and obviously interest rates another one, and balance sheet power, I guess purchasing power going up. But on the sell side, we really only sell for two reasons, and that's either to profit at high prices or because of hardship.
Mm.
So the selling for profit thing was probably going on towards the end of 2020 and in the first quarter of 2021, to some extent the second quarter of 2021 as well. But what we've actually noticed is that transaction volume has probably topped out, which is an interesting observation itself. So it's made things even tighter. While there might have been some supply side relief for a few months or a few quarters, we're seeing it tighten back up again in Q3 of 2021. So it bodes quite well for more appreciation in median price per hectare when you boil all of that down. So, yeah, certainly some interesting happenings across 2020 and then into 2021. But it was pretty much steady as it goes for the previous growth phase pattern. So it was still heading up median price per hectare and transaction volume. Some relief, but looks like it's probably topped out for the time being.
So we were looking, again, we were talking about 7-8% to 8% as a long-term average.
A long-term.
Long-term average. What would you put the number on for the last couple of years?
So 2020, we're probably looking at around 11.5. That's nationally.
Yep.
2021 to the end of September, we're actually looking at about 13.7. So that's quite a jump at a national level. Like that's obviously a lot of data.
Yeah.
So it takes a bit to move that into double digits.
Mm.
And yeah, the double digit trend is certainly carrying on into states as well.
Mm. And again, the way I always look at that is using the old rule of 72, and you just divide basically the number you come up with the interest rate in 72 to work out how long it's going to take to double your value of your assets. So if we're talking, well, anything above 10 is that we're going to double the value of our land in 7% in 7 years, 7.2 years. Anything around 13, we're doing it even less than 7 years. We are doubling the value of our land holding.
That's right. And the last couple of years, I guess, since I was on last time, has probably ramped a little bit at a little bit higher rate than sort of the previous growth phase that I covered to 2019. It's still the same growth phase.
Yeah,
it's been going since about 2014. So it's quite a long one. It's quite a long growth phase in comparison to running the numbers back further. But, it's interesting.
Are you seeing a disparity across states or commodities?
Yeah. So I look a lot at geographic area. I look at commodity a little bit, but the labelling, and we spoke about it last time, it's fairly incomplete in terms of land use. So sometimes you can do it, sometimes you can't. But certainly geographic area, where we're seeing the growth in 2021, you've got WA, which is obviously there's still a fair few sales to go in over spring and summer, but that's up around a 40% increase on 2020, huge.
Just repeat that.
Yeah. So
did you say 40%?
Western Australia, yes. The median price per hectare has actually increased 40% at state level.
Yep.
And I can unpack that a little bit for you.
Thank you.
In short, it's transaction distribution which has done that. So WA, you've obviously got your wheat belt.
Oh, okay.
And then you've got some pretty high value grazing and lifestyle areas.
Mm.
Up until the end of September, the majority of transactions have been taking place in those high value grazing and lifestyle areas.
Yep.
So what that does to median, it's not a big market in terms of transaction volume in WA, so it doesn't take a lot to sort of pull it either way. But not as many sales coming out of the wheat belt compared to those regions is basically what's done it.
And I think it's a really good point, Matt, isn't it? You've got to be careful on the data we're using to understand what some of these numbers mean. So it's very easy for us to make a sensational headline about 40%.
Yep.
But we're not talking about, as you say, the grain belt in Western Australia.
No, and that's what I say is that it's not a valuation of any one property either. It's a function of what the transaction mix is. So it's always good to consult with any Elders real estate guys and myself to actually unpack what that means at a more local level. So it's 40%, big headline number. I expect that to come back because spring and summer is pretty key selling time for anywhere. So I expect we'll get a lot more sales in the transaction mix, and we'll probably see that sort of knock the top off. But I think we could be still seeing another maybe around 20%, which is...
Yeah, I mean, still, again, I don't want to underplay that the number will be big.
Yeah, yep, yeah, that's right. And that, to give you an idea of other states, they're closer to 20%. So Victoria is about 21.9. New South Wales is about 20.7. So they're sort of, they're big numbers anyway. I mean, obviously we've got some transactions to come in, but I think we could be seeing one of our largest jumps of the last few years, if not the largest.
Yep.
It really does depend on sort of this last quarter of the year and how those numbers wash through. But yeah, I think we could be seeing some really, really high numbers for 2021.
Yep. Okay, so before we get into your crystal ball or what's going to happen in the future, what's your thoughts? And again, you talked about this decoupling of this relationship between commodities and land values, potentially. I think if I'm reading you right, what do you think's driven these prices?
Well, I think we spoke last time around commodity price, and I think that's certainly something that drives it longer term. But I think in more recent times, you've got some exceptional sort of drivers that are coming together. So low interest rates combined with balance sheet appreciation, combined with good seasons, combined with high commodity prices, it doesn't happen very regularly at all. And I think on top of that, as I spoke of before, the sell side factors just aren't there. So you've still got a tight market. So you've got all this buying power and nothing to buy.
Yeah. So you are seeing a drop off, you mentioned, but there is a drop off of transactions.
Yeah, well, I should say that transaction volume in the second half of 2020 and then the first half of 2021 was higher than what it was in the drought-induced 2018-2019.
Mm.
But it's probably not as high as what I was expecting. So I think there's just not the reasons to exit.
Basically saying there's an army of cash just wanting to buy.
Yeah, there is. And if you look at farm debt, for example, yeah, it might be high, but it's actually not growing as fast as what it has done in the last couple of years. Now, there's probably a few things to unpack there with that. Obviously, you're getting some more cash on farm as a result of better margins and whatnot. Mm. So you have got some debt being paid down, but at the same time, you've got a small kick in transaction volume, so you'd probably expect that number to maybe be a little bit higher than what it is. So there is evidence there that cash is being used, as well as reevaluating the balance sheet, so not actually needing as much debt potentially to buy the next property.
Mm.
But there's cash is playing a role in that capital expenditure, and I'm not saying that we're not at high debt levels, but it's actually not growing at a rate that's sort of... It's growing at a rate that's below the median price per hectare.
And there's always been quite a tight relationship between value of land in the national agricultural farmland and level of debt. You know, you can see quite a good correlation between those two. So it's interesting to see that that's, I don't think it's a bad thing.
No.
Being an old banker.
No, I think it's a good thing.
So people have been a little bit conservative, but obviously there's still people out there looking for opportunities to expand.
Yeah, yeah. And it gives some resilience to the whole system, doesn't it? You want a bit more sort of cash in the system to sort of wear what's coming next. We know what's coming next in terms of interest rates, and we know that there's pretty high input costs at the moment. Yeah. So some of that profitability margin is going to be eaten up. Some of that cash balance is going to be eaten up. We're seeing that in FMD balances.
I was going to ask you about FMDs. Are you seeing that FMDs increasing or decreasing, or what's happening there?
And at June, well, June's obviously the peak for FMD balances. So June 2021, it's actually below the previous couple of years in terms of the FMD balance. So sort of indicating that some of that cash is being pulled out and used, whether it's to pay off some debt or whether it's to actually go and buy another property, which is probably more likely, or invest in the property that you're on while the going's good. So, yeah, it's still healthy. It's not. I'm not saying it's dropped off a cliff by any means, but yeah, it's good to have that in the system, I think, to be ready for some of these sort of factors that might influence profitability being higher interest rates and higher input costs.
Mate, listen, what I'd like to get onto now is obviously you've been doing a fair bit of research in this land valuation stuff, and you've been looking at criteria about how you might go about describing what's happening within the land valuation area. Do you want to just elaborate on that to the audience?
Yeah, it's almost become a favourite pastime, to be honest. It's sort of coming up with a criteria for this data set and then going and having a look at which parts of the country rank the highest according to that criteria. So it's by no means advice, so I'll put that up front.
We don't give advice on the podcast.
Definitely not advice. It's just, it's just something that I do with the data set, and it creates some great content, and it's always interesting to do. Yep. So I did sit down with the 2021 data up to the end of September and come up with a criteria, and there's 4 points to that criteria, one of them being back-to-back quarterly growth rates of over 10% during the past year.
So just as I say, we'll walk through that. So what you're saying is that land values have increased by 10% on a quarterly basis.
Yep, that's right.
10%, so that's basically 40% a year.
Yeah. If you had 4 quarters of double digits,
cool. No worries.
So you're it's very healthy, and there is obviously a bit of variability at quarterly level. But I've got a criteria point for that to sort of cater for it. But then we've got a rolling 1 year growth rate of over 2% per quarter. So that's the nice smoothed out version of that back to back quarterly growth.
So we're talking about 8%.
Yeah, which is pretty healthy. It's about fitting with the long term. So I'm sort of considering that. And then I've got liquidity of over 50 sales per quarter. So it does take a bit to get 50 sales per quarter. So we want a decent sample size.
So how big is a region?
A region can be anything from 10 LGAs right up to 20, 30 LGAs.
So an LGA is?
A local government area, a municipality.
So it's a shire or something like that, so 4 shires or something in the area.
Yeah, so we group them together into agricultural regions around Australia. So there's about 40 agricultural regions around Australia according to the way we've cut it.
Yep.
So they're made up of different LGAs,
yeah. So is it time for the drum roll now?
Yeah, you can do that. And I'm also looking at a low variance between median growth over the past 3 years. So I don't want too spiky. I'm not just going for a small market which has a lot of volatility.
So what you're saying, though, is you're looking for ones that are growing strongly in the last 12 months, but it's not exceptional. They've actually been quite strong over the last 3 years.
Yeah. Looking for something that's really kicked in the last 12 months, but something that's been quite solid over the past 3 years. So just a proven performer, I suppose, which is maybe going through a growth phase at the moment. So, yes.
Do we have the envelope?
Yeah. So at number 5, I've got Northwest New South Wales, which I don't think that'll surprise anyone. I think coming out of what was a pretty tough time, 2018, 2019, very dry and not a lot happening in terms of transaction volume and a return to some better conditions.
So when you're talking Northwest New South Wales, having worked up there, you're talking both dry land and cotton?
Nah, it'd be mostly dry land.
Dry land. So we're talking about dry land cropping / grazing?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and probably heading just across the top of New South Wales. Maybe you're entering into some smaller parcels as you move across to the coast, but not all the way across to the coast. So sort of sitting in that central northwest, if you like, Gunnedah, Liverpool Plains upwards.
Okay, so are we talking Armidale?
No, I think that'll be just out of it.
Cool, good. Just okay, got you now.
Yep. So now you're triangulating it. Yeah. but yeah, it's...
Sorry, just to say, as you know, and I know, there's a when we talk about Northwest in New South Wales, it's quite a
could mean anything.
A diversity of agriculture up there.
Yeah, yep. So we've got lists for all of them in terms of what LGAs make them up, obviously.
Yep.
But roughly, that's where
I got you.
You're looking. So that has performed pretty well. That's number 5 on the list. Number 4 on the list is Central WA. So that's it's got a little bit of grazing land on. It's mostly cropping though. It's in sort of that center of the wheat belt, really.
So we're talking Dubbo or
Central WA, sorry.
Oh, WA, sorry. Yep. Okay. I'm with you now. Sorry.
So we're over it's over sort of the edge of where the bushfires have been recently.
Okay.
So obviously the the bushfire impact isn't in these numbers.
So that would be marginal cropping country, wouldn't it? I don't mean, to my Western Australian, I don't mean marginal in the way that you don't want to do it. It's just rainfall's quite low.
Not as marginal as eastern WA. Okay, like so, that would yeah. be...
So that, we're not in eastern where I go in
it's
the middle.
It's quite good. And and look, we spoke about it last time, the grain price being quite flat for quite a period of time, and this region was actually quite flat for quite a while. But
so is this catch-up footy?
Could be. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's showing signs of it. So, yeah, I'm keeping a close eye on it.
Mm.
And I've got no doubt that it probably is linked to commodity price. It's getting some stuff going over there, getting some sales going. So, an interesting one at number four.
Yeah.
Number three is northeast Victoria.
Northeast?
Yeah.
That's grazing country, isn't it?
Mostly grazing country. Probably didn't have its best year in 2020 just because of a sort of a hiccup in transaction mix more so.
Yep.
It just wasn't the high value sales. But certainly in 2021, and I've got no doubt that the lifestyle market's got a role to play here.
I was going to ask you how much you reckon has been influenced by what I call the CEO market. In other words, the Melbourne CEO having their farm near the ski fields.
Yeah, there'd be quite a bit of that, which it's part of the market. Our data set looks at 40 hectares and above, so it's got to be of some sort of size, but it's had a big role to play. And I do like the northeast because it has been proven over time. It has got quite a bit of population density up there, which does influence its farmland. It's high rainfall as well. Mm. You get across close to the divide, you've got a fair bit of water floating around, which is a positive. But yeah, it's certainly kicked in the last the last 12 months. So one to watch.
Mm.
Number two on the list is North Queensland.
North Queensland.
Yes.
So again, is this grazing country?
Yeah, it'll be a mix of grazing country to the what I call the west of that region, but it does run all the way across to the coast.
So we're talking sugarcane country as well.
Yep, a mixture of horticulture as well as some grazing. And I think it's been flat for quite a while, and I don't think that'll be a surprise to anybody. And I do think that the beef prices restocking, some confidence in the season is driving a bit of that number in 2021. So Queensland as a state increased around 20% as well in the medium price per hectare. So we are seeing things start to move in Queensland, and it's probably due. So it's pleasing to see because it did go through quite a rapid rise when at the start of this growth phase when beef prices were kicking on with export demand. So it's nice to see some seasonal conditions come back to it and getting some confidence up there and some transactions taking place. So,
okay, so drum roll.
Yes.
Number one on the hit list.
Drum roll, yeah. It's number one is Southwest WA.
Southwest WA.
I don't think this will surprise too many people over there.
So we're talking Riverina?
We're talking about some really... WA, sorry.
Oh, WA, why am I talking New South Wales?
You're starting in New South Wales.
Oh, sorry, mate. I'm focused on New South Wales. My apologies.
Well, WA, so two regions make the top five. So things are happening.
So that's high rainfall running into cropping country, isn't it?
It won't be too much cropping. It'll be mostly high rainfall grazing.
So grazing.
Yeah, a lot of lifestyle blocks again.
Yep.
Which, I'm sure 40 hectares... It's quite small for somebody over in WA, but nevertheless, it's a big part of the market in that region, and there's obvious factors why that becomes appealing. And we just spoke about northeast Victoria being influenced by a similar set of factors.
Yeah.
Southwest WA has been quite strong for a couple of years now, but certainly seeing it move higher. And again, this is just according to these four criteria points that I've come up with. It's not a exhaustive check of the market, and you will notice that South Australia and Tasmania don't have a region in this top five. And look, that's just because of the liquidity of 50 sales per quarter. They're small markets, but I can maybe give an honourable mention to the South Australia, where land values have really gone pretty hard in 2021. And probably in the grazing areas of Tasmania, which something we didn't touch on in those state results, the median prospect has actually come off in South Australia and Tasmania, which goes against, obviously, the whole country and the narrative that we're saying here.
But over the time, I've got nothing to back this on, certainly in South Australia, I've always found on a production basis, back in my days when I was looking for land, always seemed to be more expensive than other parts of the country. So I'm wondering whether that's just a balancing up of those factors.
Could be. Well, the reason that I can give is that there's been more sales in the Mallee Riverland area, which that region is a lower price per hectare.
And again, it's important that you're thinking about this from what makes up the data sets rather than saying that's a general appeal applies to my farm or where I'm based.
Yep. Yeah, you're spot on. So instead of the transaction mix being more skewed to somewhere like the southeast or even over on Eyre Peninsula, but it's the transaction mix has swung back towards the Mallee and Riverland, and there's obviously some buy side or some buying and selling side factors which are favourable there, just with the better season grain prices where they are. So yeah, we're seeing some more transaction activity out of that lower priced region, which has dragged down the state result. Now, similar in Tassie. So Tassie, we've been saying for a number of years, northwest Tassie keeps going and going. That's the irrigation area of Tassie. Well, it's swung a little bit towards the grazing areas of Tassie, so more sort of a southern Tassie regions, which have made up the bulk of the transactions in 2021, which is a great thing, but it's just to understand how that transaction mix works.
To the median price. So the question then is, of those top five, I mean, they're quite a diverse region. There's both cropping, there's livestock, there's lifestyle blocks, all seem to be having some kind of influence in it. There's not one thing that we can pinpoint and say, okay, it's the protein market, although given some of those reasons, you'd argue that that's a skewed there, but certainly the grain areas are still, prices are rising.
Yeah, I think that probably highlights that commodity price story across the board for Australian ag and at what point, how we're positioned at the moment, which, you might be able to have an opinion on it, but we've probably never been as good as what we are now in terms of combining the overall factors, I'd say.
Yeah.
That's just my limited time in the ag space, but I'd say that the stars have aligned in a way which maybe they haven't before.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and that's certainly what the sort of feedback I'm getting from the experts, and certainly from an anecdotal perspective, I would have argued that things have never looked so good.
Mm.
And again, I know there are people on farms and areas where they've had floods and dealt with those type of issues, absolutely. But if you look generally across Australia, it's actually been a pretty good couple of seasons, and that's with low interest rates, you're saying commodity prices. Again, I always worry when I say commodity prices can't fall, because of course they can, they probably will, but it does seem like we've moved to another level compared to if you go back to 2013, that protein market, those developments and living standards around the world, even given the problems we're having with the Chinese, from an export perspective, we still seem to be having strong demand for our products. So that's got to be a good thing.
Yep, I think you're spot on. I think Finn put it really well on your last podcast around the floor price has probably changed for commodities. I think that's what you're alluding to there, that we've got a lot more surety in the market and who we sell to, our domestic set of factors, our own domestic market. So, the expectation would be that it comes off, and I don't think that'll surprise anybody. I think you go through a couple of years of rebuild, and you're going to see some results from that in terms of supply.
Yeah.
So I would expect some things to come back, but I think Finn put it really well that the floor price has probably changed, and we know that commodity prices grow ahead of input costs.
Yep.
On a whole, so the cost of production doesn't grow at the same rate as what commodity prices do or have.
Mm.
So there's some room there. So it's overall, I think paints a really good picture for, I guess, our tolerance to the next cycle, which is it's probably the next question is where do we go from here?
Actually, there's one question I want to ask before that, and I don't know whether you can answer it, but in your data sets, one of the questions or statements that I often hear is that, corporates are driving this. It's corporate drive. Now, I question that because of the data I've seen that, yes, corporates are active players. I'm not disputing that. But the actual level of purchases compared to, let's call them family farms or family corporates, is certainly, you know, I wouldn't say insignificant, but certainly not significant as the family farm sector.
Yeah, and I think we alluded to that last time that in terms of transaction volume, corporates aren't high next to family farms. So that's what we're looking for here. We're looking for transaction volume, and it takes transaction volume to move that median price per hectare. So one corporate sale here or there, yeah, it might have an impact in terms of area and quite a big price tag, but it's not going to have be responsible as a key driver for why that median moves how it moves. Now, localized, highly localized, getting right down to the granular data, it might have an impact, especially if it's been purchased as a large lot and then it's sold as multi lots. So obviously there's some transaction volumes that it's increased in that area. So I don't dispute that at all. But I think it's interesting how that market works. It's probably, there's been a bit of, I said before, around profit selling, which is sort of the sell side factor at the moment. Mm. I think we've seen a bit of that in the corporate area, and you probably follow it a little bit more closely than myself, but there is evidence of corporates exiting positions of late in recent times. And
you can understand that.
You can understand it, can't you?
Yeah.
You can see why. So, yeah, I think it's a part of the market. Is it a big part of the market? I don't think so in the grand scheme of things.
Okay, mate, crystal ball.
Yeah, yeah.
What's happening? What's going to happen? Should I buy or sell?
So, I think
of course he doesn't give advice.
No, of course. No, definitely not where we're at. We're just weighing up the factors. So, if you can, I guess, imagine a set of old wool scales, and on one side we're going to put why sell, and on the other side we're going to put why buy.
Yep.
And I think the scenario for the next 12 months isn't dissimilar to the past 12 months, and what I will say that up front. So I expect balance sheet power to still be sitting on the why buy side, probably going up. We've talked about the double-digit appreciations.
Yep.
High commodity prices, I think we'll still see that continue into 2022.
Yep.
We've spoken about a higher floor price, but I don't think we'll come right back down to what we deem a floor price in 2022. Mm. So that's still sitting on the why buy side. So we've got two on the why buy. Low interest rates are still sitting on the why buy. Now, I've said we know it's going to move around November this year, but look at the base that it's moving from.
Yep.
And that's easy for me to say. I'm not sitting here with skin in the game or a loan out to property, but look at where it's coming from, and I think you would still deem them to be fairly low interest rates even when it starts to rise towards the end of this year.
Yes.
So, yeah, perception's probably everything that they're going to go up. So does that influence your decision to buy? I don't think it does in 2022. I think it still stays on the why buy side.
Mm.
So there's three weights on the why buy side. And we spoke before about really only having two reasons to sell, and that's a profitability decision, or it's a hardship decision.
Or a transition.
Yeah.
You know, family's not coming home or whatever.
Yep. Mm. Yep. You need to exit. So on that side of things, on the why sell side of the scales, profit at high price is probably the only reason I can see in 2022 for why you would exit farming.
And I reckon that influences the corporate sector more than it does the family farm sector.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah,
yep.
You know, the corporates.
Yeah, yes, you know, with why sell, yeah.
Yeah, why sell? Because, you know, from having worked in that area, that if I was holding a profit in the land like I've been holding over the next 2 years, it would be very difficult overseas investors not thinking, well, it's now time to sell.
Yep, yeah, and I think you're right. So if you imagine the scales there, it's still tilted pretty heavily to the why buy. So a lot of buy side demand.
Yeah.
Not a lot of sell side demand, so I expect transaction volume will probably get tighter.
Yeah.
And I do expect median price per hectare will rise as a result of that.
Yep.
I think it might vary, and it will vary region to region. I'm not going to say it's going to be the same everywhere, but I think on a whole, it's still going to be quite a good year for farmland values in 2022. I think we'll see them go up.
Yep. Fantastic. Well, again, for the people who own land and want to borrow money or want to sell, that's a good thing. For people wanting to get into land, and as I said, I think when I, back in the mid-2000s, I said you needed $6 million as a starting point. I would put that closer to $14 million today.
Wow.
And I think if you look at that timeline, you know, that's over the last 15 years, I think it sort of fits in with what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's obviously we spoke about balance sheet power.
Mm.
Balance sheet power, it's, you can't underestimate it in terms of being a factor in a purchase. So if you've got a balance sheet to start with,
yep,
and you're putting a fairly healthy increase on what you already own, you're unlocking huge amounts of equity to go in for the next farm. Now, if you think you're coming at it from essentially no balance sheet, maybe you obviously cash position to try and get in, it's incredibly hard.
Mm.
You can say low interest rates, great, but low interest rates means nothing unless you can actually get the loan.
You're only
for
getting
the
2% return on assets. Yes, you need low interest rates.
Yeah, look, it's tough going. I've got no doubt that first farm buyers are looking at other options, non-traditional options to get in. So you look at sort of the co-farming model or the share farming model, or the lease to buy models. There's examples out there. Cultivate Farms would be one that we've spoken to before, who have got a model which is different to the traditional model. So I think maybe looking at something like that is probably become a higher priority than going in traditionally.
No, it's certainly something that we want to look at over the next 12 months. It's those avenues into agriculture and what people are doing to get a start in the field. Matt, again, wonderful to have you. Great food for thought. And I look forward to having you back on in another probably 12 months' time, mate, just to follow up on what's happened over those 12 months.
No, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. And I hope to come back and give you an update, see where I was wrong. But we see the value in the data, and that's what we're giving back to Elders customers. So hopefully we can have a chat even if it's before 12 months' time, I'd be happy to come on and see how we're tracking. But if anyone's looking for, we've only spoken mostly at state level today, a little bit about regions, but obviously there's a whole heap of data that sits under this. So if anyone's sitting there thinking, I'd like some more information, then get in contact. Probably Elders Real Estate is the best avenue, or just myself directly. So that's just matt.ow@elders.com.au. So that's O-U-G-H for...
Yeah, I was going to thank you. Terrific, Matt. Good to talk.
Nah, thanks, David.
Thanks for listening to this week's Marcus Oldham AgTalk podcast. Please, any feedback on the series would be greatly appreciated. You can either leave a message on the site or email me at cornish@marcusoldham.vic.edu.au. Stay tuned to the next episode as we continue to explore farm management from an Australian perspective.